Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with...
This is Phil Collin.
...of Def Leppard, who's coming to Jiffy Lube Live with Journey June 8th. Hey, thanks so much for taking the time to join us, Phil.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, these two, I mean, that it's going to be a show that you definitely don't want to miss. I mean, these are two massive bands of the, you know, 70s, 80s, and beyond. It's almost hard to decide who's going to open for who with both of you guys. But what's it been like touring with Journey? Have you guys toured with them in the past, or is this the first time?
We have. We toured in 2006, and it was so phenomenally amazing that we promised to do it again. And this is actually the first time we've been able to fit it in, both bands at the same time. So, yeah, we're really looking forward to that. If there's anything like last time, it'd be amazing. And, you know, if ticket sales suggest so, you know, and just, you know, the fact that everyone's got all these great songs that everyone can sing along to, it's just a really good night. It's amazing.
Do you guys ever, is there any combining on stage for some encores or anything?
There was last time. You know, I actually ended up joining them on stage, and I would go a couple of times at soundcheck and just jam with them because they're a phenomenal band. One of the highlights, we were sitting in this Saratoga Springs in upstate New York, and Jonathan came. We had all these adjoining dressing rooms, and we were like kind of all hanging out together. And he said, "I wrote Faithfully on that piano."
Oh, wow.
And then he got on it and he started playing it, and then we all started singing along. So it was before everyone started recording stuff, and I really wish I'd have had it because it was pretty amazing. All of Def Leppard and most of Journey all sitting around and singing. Then we done other songs. It was like, whoa, who's recording this? So hopefully we'll get to do that again.
Wow. Yeah, the road is no place to start a family.
Absolutely.
Except you, I hear, are having a new addition. Tell us.
Absolutely, yeah. Babe Jackson, a little boy, spelt with an X. he'd be around any second now. Yeah, he should be... He should be arriving, and hopefully before I get out on tour, because then I'd like to meet him.
That's so awesome. Well, we can't. I mean, so many hits we'll be able to hear. I just want to let's remind some of our listeners, maybe even younger listeners, how you guys all came together. I know the band joined back in 1977 in England, sort of that British heavy metal wave. But you came on around, I think, 82. I know they had done like two albums before that had done pretty well in the UK, not as huge here in the US. And then when you came, you guys really took off. How much do you think your guitar skills sort of took them to the next level?
Obviously, everything. But no,
I set you up for that.
A combination of things. Mutt Lange, our producer, was really instrumental in everything. You know, he was just an amazing visionary and artist. I mean, he sings on all our stuff. He's incredibly done, you know, the most successful AC/DC albums. He produced them. And obviously, Shania Twain, who he was married to, Bryan Adams, The Cars. And, you know, it was just incredible what he added and his concept for what the band was. And that was really exciting. That done it. And then MTV was in its infancy. So that really helped. So along with my, you know, awesome guitar playing. But, yeah, just everything. You know, we made a hybrid of rock and pop music. And or Mutt Lange did. That was his idea. And it just seemed to work. It was right time, right place. You know, we were all very... Yeah, you know, Rick Allen was still a teenager, and then we'd blind up on MTV, and you could actually see this band. So there was a lot of things, elements that made it work that all lined up at the same time. And obviously hard work and great songs and an amazing production really was part of it. And we've kind of kept that trajectory going. I think that's why, while we're still around, you know, while I can... Yeah, again, I can still run around the stage at 60 years old better than I did when I was 25. So it's a lot of things going on.
I love it. Take me behind the scenes of your first one with them, their third album, Pyromania, 1983. That sucker, I mean, that had, what, Photograph, Rock of Ages, Foolin', well, Foolin', got to say it right.
Absolutely.
take me, I mean, that must have been, I mean, to have three hits like that, not to mention all the other songs on the album, take me into, I mean, that's your first sitting down recording with these guys, the first album. Do you remember when those three particular songs came together, or just memories of that recording that album?
It was, for me, it was so perfect because, you know, I came in as a lead guitarist. All the really heavy lifting, all the rhythm guitars and grunt work had already been done. And, you know, I joined the band and Mutt Lange said, right, be a lead guitar player, get solos. And and then he found out I could sing. So he had me singing on everything as well, the backing vocals and just all the fun part. You know, like I said, I didn't write any of the songs on that record. So it was a great introduction. And then, you know, when... the next album rolled around, obviously I was writing on that, was Hysteria, which was an even bigger album. So, yep. Yeah, it was a very exciting time. And like I said, there was so much going on. Our first gig was at a tiny club in London, the Marquee Club, you know, which the Beatles, the Stones, Hendrix and Sex Pistols, everyone had played it. And that it was, you know, 400-seater club. And it went from there, and within a year, we ended up playing Jack Murphy Stadium, which was in San Diego, 55,000 people. So, again, the trajectory was amazing. It was so just phenomenal. There was a lot of hard work went into it, but it seemed like it was a very fast-moving thing. And like I said, MTV had a lot to do with it and the current climate at the time. But we didn't look like other rock bands either. You know, there was a definite difference. You know, you could combine, say, it was more in line with how Duran Duran looked than, say, you know, Iron Maiden or Judas Priest. And so that hybrid thing really had a lot to do with it as well.
It's awesome. You mentioned Hysteria. I mean, I can't think of a more aptly named album for where you guys were in your career, because that was when the fans, it was going in hysterics at that point. Obviously, that was the title track, but the one everyone remembers that is still played at freaking clubs and colleges and weddings and everything today, Pour Some Sugar on Me. Take me into how so much of that is, I love all the double meaning innuendos, One Lump or Two. I mean, man, come on. I mean, all those songs from that era today, but you guys straddled that line pretty good on that song while making an eternal dance hit.
I know. What was interesting about it, we'd actually come to the end of the recording and of that album, and Joe Elliott was sitting in a corridor on the floor with an acoustic guitar just strumming away and singing something, and Mutt Lange went, "What's that?" He said, "I don't know." And he said, "Just play that again." And 10 days later, we had the song finished. So it was the quickest thing. The rest of the album took like two and a half years. That song took 10 days. But what was interesting about that, you know, the album came out and hadn't done that well. It was done okay, but we hadn't broken even with the money we'd spent. And then all of a sudden, you know, strippers in Florida, this is a God's honest truth, started requesting, they would dance to it, you know, in their routines, and then they would request it at the local radio station.
Wow.
So it became a hit on local radio stations in Florida, and then it kind of snowballed around the rest of the country and up in Canada as well. Same kind of reason, but and then the song became a hit because it was getting requested all over the place. So it was pretty interesting, and the fact that it did have all those innuendos, and you know, we'd borrowed some stuff from rap music, as it was called back then, because you know, Public Enemy and some of these earlier, you know, kind of rap bands, and that we're doing this vocal meter, and we kind of implied some of that as well. So it was a real hybrid.
Do you still enjoy, I mean, that opening guitar riff is so iconic. Do you still enjoy playing that? Or is there a riff you enjoy the most when you're out on tour?
No, that's pretty cool. I mean, I love all of them. They're great fun. You know, we wrote them that way. That's the thing. But it's great to see people react when you actually play that stuff. You know, even other guitar players, when you sit around and you just play some of them riffs, they freak out. It's nice to be part of that. So, again, you know, we put a lot of work in earlier on, and it kind of paid off, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell me, I mean, we got to talk about, obviously, I'm sure you've been asked this a million times, but Rick Allen's accident in 84, you know, he loses his arm, and then probably one of the most resilient things of all time, and it becomes almost a cool calling card for the band. Hey, we're going to go watch this badass drummer with one arm. Take me into that moment you guys got that call, how much of a gut punch it was. You got the news. Are you thinking, like, damn, how are we going to go on, or what's that like?
Me and Steve Clark were in Paris. And it was like New Year's Eve, and we get this phone call from our manager at the time, Peter Mensch, and he said, "Rick's had this accident, his arm's been severed." And we said, what do you mean his arm's? He said, we couldn't actually understand what he was talking about. He said his arm came off, and he's in hospital, and, you know, we're just worried he may not even make it. You know, this is really, really critical. And they managed to save Rick, but they couldn't save the arm. So we were just more concerned about how he was doing. We didn't even think about anything else.
Right,
it was just
right.
Like, is he okay? And then literally the next few weeks, you know, he's in hospital and everything. When me and Steve went to see him, me and Steve Clark, he said, "I'm going to play with my left foot instead of my left hand," with technology and everything. Because Mutt Langer had been to see him in hospital and said, "Hey, dude, you can do this.
Yeah,
you can play it with technology. You can use your left foot with foot pedals instead of, you know, left arm." So he took that and ran with it. He just practiced like dawn to dusk, you know. It was amazing the way he kind of got into it. And it really paid off, you know. I mean, we used to share an apartment, me, Steve, and Rick. He'd be up bang bang early, really early in the morning, and then, but it was cool because he was trying to get through this whole thing,
right.
And he pulled it off. It was an amazing feat, and now he doesn't even think twice about it. He just kind of naturally does that. He's been playing longer with one arm than he had with two, which is incredible.
Yeah, it's wild. Well, I've just enjoyed to see, I mean, I think you, Rick, Joe, I mean, I guess Vivian, I think you guys have pretty much had the same lineup since about 92-ish. So, yeah, I mean, you guys have stayed around. I just, tell me about sort of your staying power. I mean, I know, God, I think Promises did really well in the rock charts in the 90s. And I remember personally, I'm a bit younger, but I remember hearing your X album come out as a brand new album when I was in college in like 2003 with Long, Long Way to Go. And I was like, wait a minute,
wow.
this is a new, you know what I mean? Like, wait, Def Leppard, I thought they were classic rock, and now they're putting out great new stuff. Just what's the secret to you guys sticking around so long? You just love being on the road, or you love the guys, or what is it?
No, I think we've always got something to prove. We love doing this, and this resilience, I think we learned it from our parents, you know. Yeah, my mom and dad, all of our parents, actually, you know, they were being blown up, you know, in World War II.
Right.
In my mum and dad, you know, I'm from London, and you know, you'd have all these crazy stories, and there was all this resilience and kind of positive kind of affirmations because they'd been through all this. Joe's parents, you know, going in the air raid shelters and all that. It's something we can't even, it's phenomenal. You can't even imagine that happening.
Yeah.
But they went through that, and I think we learned some valuable lessons from our parents, a really good value system, if you like, from that experience from them. And it certainly made us a bit more certainly resilient, you know, for sure. And we still have that kind of approach to stuff.
Absolutely. And that resiliency has allowed you, you know, speaking of, you know, lasting a long time and spanning decades, I know you've had to keep up with changing technology, too. And I want to bring that up because I know this year is the first time that Def Leppard's, their whole catalog is available digitally on all platforms. I know you guys held out for a while before putting it on iTunes. Like a lot of bands just put their stuff up there, but you guys kind of held off. Just talk about sort of how that's changed the industry and why you guys decided to, you know, finally... This year was the time.
Well, we held out because we felt, you know, one of us lost a limb, one of us lost their lives,
right.
And we'd spent millions of dollars and so much energy on all this stuff that it seemed only fair that you know, we felt it had more value. I know everyone was just giving their stuff away.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a clause in our contracts also, which we didn't have to do that, which was pretty amazing. So, mm-hmm. We held out until the time was right, and until, you know, we re-signed with Universal Records, our label, back in the day, and we're working with them great. That's all we wanted. We wanted to work with someone that was going to, you know, do right by it. You know, if we're out there every single year, we took 1 year off since I joined, that was 2010. Other than that, we've been working, you know, even when it kind of wasn't so great, back to that resiliency thing again, and we felt that it had value, and we wanted to work with someone who was hardworking as us, and the label are at the moment. We love it. We love the new kind of partnership, and it's going great. So we're just waiting for that moment, really, and it's just been amazing, you know, that, you know, people have the Def Leppard T-shirts, but they've never heard the band.
Right.
Yeah, so I think, you know, people can connect the T-shirt to the sound of the band.
Absolutely. Well, you got the T-shirts. You got, you know, Rock of Ages became the title of a Broadway musical and a movie. I mean, and obviously the songs. I mean, all this stuff is adding up, not to mention your guys' long duration. I want to see you guys get in the Rock Hall. What's it going to take?
Better ask them, you know. I have no idea. You know, it's never been... We don't really care about that stuff, obviously,
because
we have the integrity to keep going. It's not really about accolades,
sure.
Or, you know, just... Grammy, we never had a Grammy, you know, we've never even been nominated. They didn't have a category when we were selling like nearly a million albums a week, you know, back in the 80s, which is sounds amazing. And the fact that this band couldn't even get a Grammy nomination. So all of that stuff doesn't really bother us. It's more about making the music and just having a value system. Like I said before, we do have integrity. We love what we do, and we love our fans who love what we do. And it's that's what we feed on, and it really works well. We're inspired. And we're inspired by our fans and the way that our music sounds, and by each other. You know, like I said, you know, it's really awesome to see Rick get up there every single day and just do that without even thinking about it. It's pretty amazing.
That's awesome. Well, we're excited to come see the tour. Again, it's Def Leppard with Journey out at Jiffy Lube Live on June 8th. Phil Collin, thank you so much. You've been really generous with your time and your answers. Very in-depth. I've loved talking with you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much. That's really cool. I look forward to it. Yeah, my daughter, my oldest daughter, lives in Virginia. She's in Virginia Beach. So sometimes she'll be up there as well. So we'll see.
She going to drive up and see the show?
Maybe. Well, she's 13, but, yeah, but I hope not.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll get her an advanced learner's permit or something.
There you go.
All right, cool. Thank you so much, man.
Pleasure. Thank you.
All right, bye.
Bye.